Hit a home run and get pre-approved for your next refinance or home purchase at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
He's been the head coach at SLU for 12 years. That's Darren Hendrickson. Five times they have finished first in the A-10, started his college head coaching career at Fontbonne in 96, has been the head coach at Forest Park, Central Missouri State, and now at SLU. And he joins me. And Coach, that's a long resume, isn't it?
I'm old. Yeah, that's a lot of schools, a lot of fun, a lot of players. Good memories.
Yeah, I bet it is. I wanted to get you on to talk not only about a special event you have with Ricky and Keel to raise awareness for the program and some money, but also to talk about how the game has changed. So you started in 96, and now here we go into 2020. The game of baseball in general has changed an incredible amount, but what about the college game in particular?
Well, the college game is changing fast. It's trying to, you know, mimic what the pro game's doing. A little more analytics and technology, of course, is playing a big part in it all. So we as coaches have got to adapt real fast, and we have kids being trained differently that are coming to us, and we're recruiting. But the recruiting is the big thing for me that's changed. I think if you ask every coach in the room, they would say that's the number one thing. It's the madness that goes with that.
Yeah, you need players to win, bottom line. You're a smart guy. You do a great job, but you need players, don't you?
Yeah, I always used to say, I joke still every year, I always say Tony La Russa couldn't win if he didn't have, you know, the some of these guys and this guy and that guy. But yeah, it really is no secret. I mean, we're all as good as our team. So recruiting is our lifeblood. We got to do it.
Yeah. How has it changed? When you say it's really changed, what stands out for you?
Well, I think you know, I would say 5-6 years ago only, I think we spend about, if you go back to that time frame, I think we spend probably double or triple the amount of time on recruiting and perhaps chasing kids that, you know, you maybe could have seen in your backyard at some time or closer. We travel a lot more. We are, it's called a circuit. You know, you're following a travel club circuit teams that are going throughout the summer for the month of June and July, and then fall ball is another wrinkle that's thrown in there as well. So and if you don't, you feel like you're missing out, you know, and then you gotta kind of what we call babysit and take care of guys that we are on hard or have signed or committed. It's a full-time job.
How has social media changed recruiting?
Oh, boy, how much time do we have?
I was going to say, we could do an hour on this, huh?
Yeah, that's a show in itself. But I think the biggest thing from that is that, you know, it's giving kids an opportunity. If you look at it from a positive, it's giving them an opportunity to be seen and be visible, that maybe a small-time kid that doesn't get to whatever showcase, whatever camp. But I think the big thing, too, on the downside is, you know, we don't want to see every invitation that you get to everything or every offer you get or anything you get. So
yeah,
we get everything. You know, you get the whole buffet instead of just what you want to.
Do you learn, though, about a kid a little bit, good and bad?
Yeah, you do. And sometimes, you know, we're not in a position, like a lot of teams, we're not in a position to, you know, turn our noses sometimes if something on social media is, you know, kids are 15, 16, 17.
Sure.
They're going to do things on social media that probably may not have the optics that you'd like and go, that's going to translate to be a good thing. But then you just got to look at age, and that's what they know. That's what they grew up with. And, you know, so some kids Twitter, but we do follow Twitter. I mean, that's part of it too. And I think most coaches have somebody that follows it.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to, I would think.
Right.
When do you guys fire up? It's pretty soon.
Monday. We go, and it looks like weather will be outside. So we start practice already. Our first game is February 14th, which is a great way to spend a Valentine's Day when you're been married for 24 years. And my wife would rather – there's no place she'd rather be than me at the ballpark probably that day. But it'll be a fun time. You know, it's just a month now. You just go – you get a month to practice, and you're out there.
In terms of weather, being in St. Louis and you're in the A-10, so you're dealing with a lot of northern schools and whatnot. But what is the cutoff usually for, like, temperature to practice and for games? Because you got to get your schedule in.
Well, that's the key. If it's, you know, the fall and you have some time and you're an older coach now, you go, Yeah, well, maybe stay inside today. But no, honestly, we really push the envelope and go out, and especially with the turf now. We've been, you know, really lucky to get field turf over at SLU. And I think you're out there in the turf. If it's for our deal, it's about, you know, 37-8, but it's really about the wind.
Yeah.
You know, when you're out there and you can't survive in the wind chill and what the temp feels like, that's for what's us, you know. So if we look and say it's 42, but the wind's, you know, 20-mile-an-hour wind, and, you know, we may say that's not going to help anybody.
How is the equipment change? I bring this up because I did college baseball for a number of years, and as you know, I do the Cardinals now for, you know, over two decades. And you tell a guy, all right, if you pitch inside, you might saw him off. If you pitch inside in college, that's not necessarily the case with an aluminum bat. So the equipment has changed a little bit, but yet you still have the principles of the game.
Yeah, it's always evolving, and I think you're always going to look at somebody trying to get an edge with some equipment. I think some of the rule changes have affected the game more
go
than
into
the
that.
Equipment.
What is it? What's different that if somebody's listening and they follow the Cardinals or Major League Baseball and they say, well, I've been to a college game, but yet the rules are a little bit different. What are those?
Well, I think the hit-by-pitch rule is pretty controversial, where they're now and I think it's a good rule. They're keeping guys at home plate for what they call chicken winging it over the plate or leaning over the plate or
Craig Biggio.
Deliberately trying to get hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're wearing all the gear like the pros wear. So that's I guess the same thing from that level to our level. But I think that's a big rule because there were teams literally proud of the fact they would get hit 150 times a year.
Sure.
But, you know, if you look at on-base percentage, and to use an analytic term, and that goes right into, you know, hey, that's a base runner.
Yeah.
And now you can be called out if you're over the plate and you get hit by a pitch, that's strike three if you have two strikes.
I like that rule.
Yeah, it is, because a guy would get two strikes and he'd say, boy, I'm not going to hit this guy probably, so I'm going to try to get hit and just any way I can get on. And you like the mentality, but it's really not what the game's about, to be honest, in my opinion. I think from a purist standpoint, you know, you're about competing against that guy.
Are there other rules that stand out too?
I just think they changed the baseball, which is a pro thing as well, you know, as we've all heard with juice balls or whatever you want to call them, or tightly wound. But ours are low seams now, and that seems to have helped our game a little bit. You know, we wanted a little more offense, and we get plenty of offense, but pitching still dominates. It still dominates in the big leagues. We've got to score runs to keep people excited.
Yeah, it's tough to do, though.
You know, that's right. The pitching's really good.
I'm curious about, and we'll have a lot of people listening that are baseball fans, and you've been in this area now forever. You played in this area, too. The competition, how good is the baseball player that's coming up through high school and college now in this area specifically?
I think St. Louis is very good. You know, I'm not saying that from a biased standpoint. We see several parts of the country because we recruit nationally at SLU. So we don't just have St. Louis kids or watch St. Louis kids only. But I think overall St. Louis kids are very good. I do. And I think the coaching, the club teams that are available and the teachings that go on are overall pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And so I think kids have a lot of choices. I think you know, you could say what you want about where to go, how to do it all, and how to prepare. But I think you've got always knocking on the state tournament door every year. You've got several teams from right here. And so I think it gives, you know, the problem for us is that some of those kids, you know, they just want to go away to school.
Yeah.
And
that happens.
So that's just part of wherever you would be from. But, you know, that's one of the tough parts. But either way, it's got a lot of good kids, a lot of good program.
How analytically based is the SLU baseball program? How would you describe that?
Evolving fast and doing everything we can with our limited resources toward that area. But we are certainly trying to get on board quick.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and we're all on board to a certain extent. We have a lot of data now that we are able to use that we weren't. We subscribe to programs that help us gather that. We don't have our own analytics department per se, but we do have two guys that run it as interns that are now full time. You know, that's their job full time for our team. So I think that's a quite an advancement in the last 3 years for SLU, you know, a SLU type of program. But you know, I think that there's a new video program out that we use. It's called Synergy. Every Division I school in the country is pretty much using it now, mm-hmm. in basketball as well. I don't know about other sports, but I know Travis Ford uses it. And it's basically, I can watch any team that subscribes across the country or that plays an opponent that subscribes, which is pretty much everyone. And I can watch their entire lineup, their entire pitching staff.
Wow.
Over and over, all their at-bats, every pitch.
That's amazing.
Up throughout the year. So needless to say, what we do through the week is a ton of that.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Well, it beats the old days of, like I said, 2, 3, 4, or 5 years ago of just reading a paper scouting report you got from, you know, schools around the country and your friends and all this stuff. And now you go, oh, I see the what I just read here, and use both. And we're all into data. Let's not kid each other. It's a big, big part of our game.
I don't know if you read the article. I found it fascinating, and you're not here to talk about the Missouri program, but it did focus on Mizzou. It was written by Enos Harris, and it talked about how advanced Mizzou's gotten because they're northernmost in the SEC. And he said, well, we're trying to get any edge we can. We figure if we're analytically based and have a ton of video and a ton of ways to track spin rate and launch angle, then, you know, we're maybe getting ahead of the game. That's where this thing is going, isn't it? I mean, and certainly that's got to be the case with teams in the A-10 and yourself.
It is. You know, there's debate about, you know, we've got so many things to fix in our game, like a lot of sports in college, but the volunteer position is, you know, really a stickler for me. I have a tough time asking a young guy to, you know, cut his teeth in our industry. It's already tough enough, and not pay him. And then when you look at all that and you say, where do you spend your money? Do you spend it improving your pay there, or do you spend it on analytics? I think you'd be split sometimes down the road.
Sure.
That's how important analytics is, to answer your question.
Yeah.
But I do think that the analytics part for me, you know, and I've got to buy in real fast and get us going and, you know, be leading the charge, because, you know, certainly if we had the resources to hire just a full-time person and that was their job and we had it all set up where we could gather data, we need that, everyone. And I don't think there'd be a coach out there that would say we don't want it. It's really about how can we best utilize our resources and our people. But a lot of it's our assistant coaches and myself doing the, like I said, a lot of the, you know, breakdown of video work. We have all kinds of charts and data that come out and say what, you know, what people hit, where they hit it, you know, spray charts galore.
Yeah.
So the companies now are, you know, the old days they sold you bats when you went to the ABCA convention. They sold you gloves and they sold you baseballs. And then there are a few gadgets started coming along and radar guns got a little going. But now they're selling you the things I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's
incredible.
And you're
just going, well, I guess I got to buy it. But the stuff we've spent our money on in the last, you know, two or three years especially, is all about analytics.
Do kids come to you and they say, Coach, can you help me with my launch angle? I need help with my spin rate. I mean, these are things that are common phrases now in the game. Do you get that now, even at the high school, college level?
We do. we have to balance, you know, yes, we do. But our problem is we're crunched, 56 games. You know, Major League Baseball is 162 games, and I've got time to get through some things. And, you know, I'm not saying that games aren't important, but you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
You live the life.
Yeah.
But our game is, you know, it's not a must-win every game, but
darn close.
It's almost there.
Yeah.
You know, so of course, we treat it as that, you know, coaches and players. So I think when they come to us and they say, you know, we've got to do that in the fall. We've got to do a lot of that in January. But we've got to get ready to go compete against the guy across the diamond in the other jersey.
Sure.
So there's a time for it and a place for it. And then it becomes, but you use that to help the guys in season two. You know, like if a guy's spin rate's down or if his, you know, something you catch on film is pretty evident, you're going to take time to stop that and try to correct it. It's just a matter of, you know, I don't know that I worry about your launch angle when we're trying to, you know, beat VCU in the weekend series in May.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
at that time. I'm trying to score one more run than them at that time.
Yeah.
Fall is big time in that.
Hey, Blues fans, join the party all season long at Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill and one of their 11 area locations. Great food and drink specials available during every Blues game. It is your home for Blues hockey. Remember, if the Blues score 5 any game this season, you get Hotshot's legendary tacos for $1 each the next day. Find a Hotshot's near you at hotshotsnet.com. Proud partner of the St. Louis Blues. I hope you know about the Schnucks Rewards app. If for some reason you don't, where have you been? The whole city has been downloading this. If you're a Schnucks Rewards member, you're going to earn points. And the next time you're at Schnucks, you can use those points for money off. Digital coupons on the items you want most. Download the Schnucks Rewards app. Get the app that gets you.
The college game, too, I find it, you watch teams, they bunt, they move runners over, that kind of thing. And that's one of the big differences that you don't see in Major League Baseball as opposed to the college game. Would you agree?
Yeah, there's some differences that we still... You know, we still play to. And I'll be honest, I use this as a great example. If you've been at Slough's Park, the wind blows in some days in early, you know, March or April. And I know, having been there for, you know, 12 years now, that I know that one run might win the game or a 2-1 lead or a 2-run lead or something like that. I'll be happy to have that. So in that case, I would bunt. If it's blowing out and things are different, then this goes for a lot of coaches, a lot of places, but especially true at home, then we may swing away, and because we're not a big bunting team. We never have been, and we just don't. But, you know, Augie Garrido, one of the best coaches of all time at Texas, he used to bunt in the first inning.
Yes, he did. I used to do those games.
And he would do it and try to get a lead on you, and then he would strangle you with an incredible pitching staff and at the time, a bullpen, which was unheard of for college baseball. But you got to remember, that was his team, his personnel. And so who's going to argue that? You know? But I don't know. Everybody's different. Some people like to run. And the turf has changed the game, too, I think. And plus, you know, there's a lot of college pitchers that aren't very good at fielding their position, just to be quite honest. And
why is that?
Well, it's in the pro game, too.
Absolutely.
You know. They don't want the ball hit to them. They don't want the ball to think. They don't want to throw the pitch. And it's really sad for me because I, you know, always consider myself I want you to bunt the ball back to me because I used to, you know, love to take ground balls.
Yeah.
But I just think some guys they're just so trained and robotic about, you know, this is what I do. I deliver the pitch and then my fielders take over. So that's a different thing too. But I think the game is trending toward the pro game a little bit, but I think college needs to sometimes have some trickery to it, sometimes have a little edge of where, you know, hey, we have a more of a strength over you right now that you can't stop us. And I don't know that the pro game has that. I think pro game evens out.
You've had a great run at SLU, and it continues today, and you're expected to have a good season. You're putting out pro players, and that's something that SLU was not doing prior to your arrival, not to take away from others that have been there, but you're putting out pro players. What kind of team do you have, number one? And then also, two, give us an idea of some of those kids that have moved on to the professional ranks.
Well, the first thing I want to say is that we have – it was really weird when we got our first couple guys drafted, and we were, you know, certainly super proud, and we looked and we said, boy, we've done a really good job at player development, because that was the one thing we had to focus on. We used to talk to our staff about, because we're not getting five-star recruits and, you know, no-brainer first-rounders. So we had to develop people and to get them ready for life on in pro ball. And then we kind of became the victims of our own success by losing 6 juniors.
Yeah.
Which at SLU and in mid-majors at, you know, for several years.
Big.
Well, that wasn't happening.
Yeah.
And when you lose juniors at our level, because usually seniors win in our league, where the SEC was all, you know, if you weren't drafted by the time you're a junior, then you were kind of considered a failure. No, I hate to say that, but
yeah.
For lack of better terms. So our guys, you know, we have James Norwood in the big leagues with the Cubs, who's on the 40-man, who was called up for most of the year last year when Brendan Morrow got hurt. And I think that he's in their plans for sure. So he's probably the number one guy that you look at and say, boy, there's a success story. Got to SLU throwing 87 miles an hour with one pitch and played shortstop in high school.
It's incredible.
So neat storyline, but unbelievable worker and great kid. And our assistant coaches and strength people that really helped him deserve a lot of credit. They did a great job. And then I think you look at Miller Hogan, who's the highest pick that SLU's had. It's sixth rounder, just a couple years back, and helped us into the 18 regional. He's on a good route. Matt Eckelman is up high, and so we've got guys that are Alex King. That 18 team had three guys off of it drafted, and so that's why we're semi-rebuilding.
Sure.
And last year was a down year because we literally lost, eight of our nine offensive players.
Are you finding, and I'll wrap up this portion of it, and then we're going to talk about the dinner that we have coming up, but are you finding that universities at this level, at the A-10, certainly the SEC was doing it for years, Big 12, that the investment in baseball is getting better and better by the universities and the sports departments because they know that it could be a moneymaker for them? It's always been football or basketball, but now we're starting to see a little bit more towards baseball.
I do. Not everyone is bought in. It's unfortunate because I get it too. There's a lot of complicated factors that obviously we can't get into with time, but it's 35 players. It's a lot of travel. It's a long season, and they've done a good job trying to, help our sport. We still are very much behind in coaching to player, ratios. That's the one area that's just,
sure,
it's embarrassing,
yeah,
for lack of better terms. Secondly is the facility piece is, you've got to invest in facilities in today's world. I mean, high schools are running out great facilities all over the place. And if colleges aren't doing that, kids aren't going to come to your school when their high school's equal or a better field.
I mean,
it's just the way it is.
Right.
And so you gotta tackle that. But I don't know that everyone's making money on it. I think the visibility is off the charts. As you see, every regional, every super regional, and certainly Omaha is all televised now. And ESPN picked all that up on the SEC network. And
yeah.
And I think those two things alone put our sport into a whole new stratosphere of what college baseball is. Because a lot of people, like you said earlier, they've never seen a college baseball game. And every time I give a speech around the country or at a camp or clinic, I always say, go see a college baseball game in person.
That's awesome.
Because I think you can really feel what batting practice is like, what in and out's like, and then certainly when the game starts.
January 31st is a big, big day for the program because it's your first pitch dinner, and I've been there a number of times. And now this one, we have Ricky and Keel coming in. And I think not only is his story amazing, but your players are there, which is so cool too. So from the player's perspective and your coaching perspective, that's a great story for those guys to hear, and I can't wait to get their reaction.
Well, I give full credit to you for handpicking our special guest this year. But no, honestly, I want to thank you for doing a great job. We've had unbelievable guests. I mean, honestly, when you step back, when this is all over and I'm done, I'm going to say, wow, this was a neat thing that we've done with.
And you started it.
Well, we started it with innocently one night after a Cardinal game with Tony La Russa. And now that's a pretty good start. How
are you going to get better than that?
Well, it went on, and we figured out how to maybe do this and that. But anyway, Rick Ankiel was when you told me all that, I saw the documentary that they did on him, and then his story, it just, like, I couldn't put it down, and I watched the entire thing, and I said, that's no brainer. We're run with this. But
yeah,
I knew Rick a little bit. I have a funny story about him. When I've thrown BP with the Cardinals, for 24 years now too. That's my real job, by the way.
Yes, it is.
But it's Rick was an outfielder. He and the late Chris Duncan and Colby Rasmus. They were hitting in a group, and we were in Florida on a road trip, and they were all pulling the ball nonstop into the seats in an afternoon BP. And Tony La Russa blew up, and he said, don't throw them a strike again if they keep trying to hit home runs. He goes, I want these guys, getting out of the pull happy mode. That's why they're hitting 210, blah, 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 blah. It was really, and they weren't hitting 210, but
sure, I get
Tony was kind of upset about some of that. But anyway, so I always remember Rick, trying to say, gosh, I'm really not trying to hit a home run here. I'm just trying to, but that's what an athlete he was.
Yes.
And so I want people to hear the story. I cannot wait. Dan, for the average fan that doesn't know, but these are really unappreciated gems, in my opinion, when you think about you've got you leading the charge and conducting the night to hear Rick Ankiel's story right there in town, in right before spring training kicks off.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a good teaser for the upcoming baseball season. So I'm hoping folks will just generally who are Cardinal fans or baseball fans, but this one's more about life too. This is a really good one. So we are highly anticipating this.
It's all aboard the newest restaurant in St. Louis, the Train Shed at Union Station. Perfect place before and after Blues and Cardinal games. Historic St. Louis Union Station is downtown's newest dining destination with Train Shed's creative pub and the Soda Fountain's modern diner. The Train Shed at Union Station. Hair Saloon for Men. You'll receive the perfect haircut, complimentary beverage, relaxing shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine. All for just $22. Hair Saloon for Men.
For people that have never been to this event, so tell them they show up and what happens.
Well, you show up and you have a cocktail hour and just kind of a meet and greet, and you meet the team and some of the players and people there, and we have a silent auction that goes along with it, just baseball items, fun items, and then we have a dinner right at SLU's campus at the Allied Health Room, which is where we had the Whitey Herzog Don Dinkinger one, and then you know, I'll say a little bit about this upcoming season and preview the season with our team, introduce our players, and then I turn it over to you for the real show. And that's you and Rick for an hour and a little Q&A at the end, and it's an easy night.
Yeah, and best way to get tickets for folks, and how much are they?
It's $100 a ticket. That includes everything, and you can get them through the Billiken Club office with Margo Lubis. That number is 977-8180, or you can call the baseball office at SLU as well and get them from there.
It's going to be a great night. You're going to have a great year, and thanks for doing this. A lot of fun.
Thank you for everything.